Dave.
A podcast of the cinema.
Starring Alonzo Durrell, Dave. Yeah. You are the reviews editor at The Wrap. You are the co-host of Who Shot You on the Maximum Fun Network. You are the co-host of Breakfast All Day, formerly known as What the Flick. Stop complaining. Not you.
I think
listeners, everyone. I'm just going to keep saying it until they stop.
I think they're coping now. And you are Dave White, film critic for The Wrap and co-host here with me of this show and all the other shows that we do for our Patreon listeners. More on that later. This is a super exciting day.
It is a super exciting day. We got treats from Milk Bar.
That's part of it, yes. I'm reminded
they have
of
this corn elote thing that has
cornbread elote.
Yeah. And it comes with all these different like accessories
and the kind of
you
garlic
dump on
oil
top.
Or something.
There's this, like, creamed corn and grilled like pickled onions and a chili oil.
Chili oil. That's the one I could want.
It's
it's
so good. And oh yeah, we have a guest.
We do.
Also, we have a guest.
I'm reminded one of my favorite bits from the early SNL was Cicely Tyson hosted Saturday Night Live, and when they announced it for the monologue, Garrett Morris comes out in drag and starts doing it as Cicely Tyson, and then she walks out behind him. She's like, "Garrett, what are you doing?" And he goes, "Well, I didn't think we could get you," and I didn't think we could get the guest that we have today. But shockingly enough, Elliot Kalin is here, everyone.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Who is Elliot Kalin?
A brief stroll down his impressive resume. Head writer for Mystery Science Theater 3000, The Return. Former head writer for The Daily Show. Co-host of the hilarious The Flophouse podcast. Also on the Maximum Fun Network, which if you are not listening to, you're doing podcasts wrong. And he also has a deep belt of Marvel Comics bona fides, which is why we really wanted to have him here to walk us through the baffling complications of Marvel, of Avengers Endgame.
It's a movie that, to me, was as smooth as silk. Like, it's everything about it, I was like, this is mother's milk to me. I know, like, so I'm happy to untangle anything. But.
No, I actually the comics-y stuff I was okay with. It's time travel movies tend to give me headaches. Just once I started thinking about, well, then. And how about, but if now, so if he, you know, so anyway, but we'll get into that.
So I was about to say, are we just diving into Avengers Endgame?
We don't have to. We can well, get there.
I'd love to say thank you very much for having me.
No,
I'm super
for being
excited.
Here.
And the only reason I have not been a guest of yours earlier is because.
You did not live here.
I lived on the other side of the country.
And we don't know how to Skype people in.
That's beyond our ken.
And ever since I moved to Los Angeles, I have been. Life has thrown one thing after another at me, and so I'm glad that I could finally.
You're dadding, so that's that takes a lot of time and
most efforts. I was talking to my wife yesterday about I used to be able to work in the morning really well, like the morning was my good creative time, and now I find the afternoon and the evening is my good creative time, and it was only this morning as I was like struggling to get one son dressed while the other son was yelling at me that I was like, oh, that's why I can't do it. Like,
right.
I'm super tired in the morning. I have all this stuff. I have all these tiny humans to like keep alive until I can push them off on other people.
I'm really productive during nap time. I don't know what that's about. Now,
before we do go on,
yes.
I want to kiss your butt just a little bit about the Flophouse because Alonzo foists podcasts upon me all the time. We're in the car, and he's like, let's listen to this new podcast that I like. And I start listening, and 10 minutes in, I think, I want to kill these people, whoever they are, and I don't want to hear one more group of dudes cracking on bad movies. Except y'all.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Because it's a criticism I have of myself. Because I'm like, does the world really need again another group of guys talking about bad movies?
You got there first.
Y'all got in there early, and I know I can hear other of these other shows that do the bad movie thing, have listened to you guys.
Really? Do you think so?
I just know they have. You know they have, and they can't somehow get it together in a way that I approve of. And so, no, y'all are my only bad movie podcast.
Awesome. Thank you.
And that's I not that my endorsement is this, like, anything, but I have no patience for almost every other podcast he tries to make me listen to.
I guess you shouldn't name him, but now no, we're I'm not really curious about, because it's I have a that's my experience with my family and music. Yeah. Is I always listen to the music that the rest of my family likes, because I'll be like, oh, let's maybe I'll put on some of my music and I'll see if you like this, and within minutes usually they're like, turn it off. And the only difference has been my son. I've been able to get him into Judas Priest and Sparks, and so when I'm driving to school, he's like,
that's a gamut.
I want to listen to because that's and it, like my taste in music is like, well, there's Judas Priest and Sparks and like nothing in between.
Dad, can we listen to Cool Places featuring Jane Wedlin?
Yeah, that one he used to like, and now he finds it repetitive. Lately, he's been like
Angst in My Pants.
He's like, I want to listen to Angst in My Pants. And he's like, today this morning he goes, Propaganda, Daddy. Let's listen to Propaganda. And he's like, I think my third favorite song on the album is At Home at Work at Play. Like, he's ranking all the. He's 5 years old.
He's going to be working at Amoeba next week.
He'll be singing pieces of Spark songs. Like, lately he's been singing just the chorus of Nicotina from Angst in My Pants. And my wife finds the song so annoying. And the other night she goes, can we put a stop to Spark songs at the dinner table? I don't want to hear them anymore. And it's just like, and I'm like, there's part of me that's like, oh, I can't wait to take him to a Spark show. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's never going to happen. Like, it's amazing they're still performing, but.
They might still be alive when it's time.
Maybe.
You never know.
State Fair.
I went to see them during their last LA show, and I was like, these guys are still amazing, and they're very old.
But, right.
They're probably not as old as I think they are. But anyway, that's a long way of saying I totally understand the feeling of wanting to introduce somebody to something in the car and then them being like, no, turn it off immediately.
We have the same relationship with music.
That's like, true, yeah.
I listen to what he likes. Mm-hmm. He can't go down.
Death metal Joe over here, I can't deal with
me at all. And that's, we understand each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's things that it was exciting to me when I was building my relationship with my wife, that it was like, there are things we like together, and there are things we like separately. Mm-hmm. And the things I like with you are things that I don't have anyone else that I like them with the same way. But the things I don't like with you, I have other people I can like those things with. So like, yeah, exactly. So it's like, okay, we don't have to play thrash when you're in the car. You know, like this.
Yes, Dave has plenty of friends to go see My Bloody Valentine with. I don't have to go.
Yeah.
And run out during the finale and, like, you know, with my ears covered.
Similarly, with to bring it back around to what we're here with, God, that yes. I don't have to drag her to Avengers Endgame because I have other people I can see that with. Yeah. So, you know, whereas if I'm going to watch I'm trying to think of a movie we watched recently where I wouldn't be able to find anyone else. Or, like, I'm like, well, I finally have to get around to watching The Barretts of Wimple Street. And she's like, okay, yes, let's watch it together.
Now, you're like a lifelong East Coaster. So I'm wondering if you've had that moment that every LA transplant has of the, oh, God, I live here now. Like, for Dave, it was one time we were driving somewhere in the weekend and we got into this conversation about whether it made more sense to take Hollywood or Franklin or Sunset. And I was like, ha-ha! You are now an Angeleno because you have a preference of routes, and driving is all we do here.
Franklin. That's the answer. Franklin.
I was so ready to leave New York that I was kind of like, I feel like I haven't had that. It hasn't been a shocking moment, but definitely like when I realized like, oh, I really like driving. And when I was a teenager, I hated driving. So in New York, I was like, this is great. I don't need a car ever. And now I have realized, if I go to see a movie with a friend of mine, I'll be like, you live in Burbank, right? I'll drive you home, whatever. Like, then I'll drive home from Burbank. Like, that's fine. More time in the car. Like, that's great. Like, all the time I spent playing video games when I was young, I feel like have now merged into my driving skills. And now it's just like, oh, I'm just like playing a game all the time.
It's all Grand Theft Auto all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's just what other people consider the boring parts of Grand Theft Auto, but which I always thought were the more interesting parts. You're just driving around.
Listen to the radio.
Yeah, exactly. all these hits from the 80s. This is great. But it's I've been pleasantly surprised by how not as difficult. I mean, career-wise, it's been a much more difficult transition to come to LA, but living-wise, how it's been a much easier transition than I thought it was going to be.
Well, somebody I know made the joke that, like, New Yorkers eventually decide that they want Sunshine and a Driveway.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, my family, we just bought a house, and I was like, it's the exact opposite of the house that I grew up thinking I would live in. It reminds me of the house I did grow up in, and I was like, I'm going to live in New York, I'm going to have an apartment,
right.
I'm always going to be probably going to, like, probably, like, art gallery openings that, like, probably, like, Lou Reed will stop by, like, this. Like, this is, and, you know, I'll probably be always at, like, book readings, or me and my friends will have our book release parties, and instead it's like, oh, this quiet tree-lined street. Look at this single-story bungalow house. Like, this is so nice. Oh, there's, like, and yet it's sunny all the time. I don't wear a leather jacket anymore because I don't need to wear a leather jacket. Like, I guess things change as you get older, I suppose, you know.
Yeah, you like things to be nice and soft and comfortable and quiet.
Yeah, as opposed to when I was younger and I was like, discomfort, please. Yeah, like, yeah. Is it cold out? Great, good. I don't want a coat. I'm just going to walk around in it.
What were we watching?
When we get to Under the Silver Lake later this episode, just watching that movie, I was like, oh, thank God. Thank God I am not, like, in my 20s anymore and having to go to the club with the thing and the just...
Well, when we were watching Her Smell a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And all the, like, all the rock and roll venues.
Right.
And I just remember thinking, back in the 1980s, when my family... I was living in Texas. I would go to the warehouse district in downtown Dallas where there were no streetlights. And it was considered to be distinctly dangerous, a place to go to. But that's where all the punk clubs were. Mm-hmm. And there was one there called Theater Gallery that had a hole in the roof. And it was just a concrete bunker. And I would see the
just great for
the
acoustics.
Most punishing. Well, but it didn't matter because it was bands like Sonic Youth and Butthole Surfers and Live Skull and people like that.
I was kidding.
Go there. I went there one night and it was snowing outside, and Live Skull was performing, and the snow was coming through the roof and forming a puddle around their electrical equipment.
Yikes.
There's nowhere to sit. It's 40 degrees in the club because there's no heat. And I thought, I'm having the time of my life. Youth. And I was. I wouldn't go do that ever again anywhere. I was just told recently that a band, which band was this there? Oh, Low is coming to town sometime mm-hmm. in the summer, but the venue has no seats.
That's not a show you'll be seeing.
I'll go buy that record and sit in my comfy chair and listen to it in my home and have a cup of tea. I am not going to go out to see him.
I just looked at the May New Beverly calendar. And if you live in Los Angeles, check it out because they're doing a ton of movies directed by women. It's very exciting and a lot of cool rep titles that don't pop up a lot. And
when
one
you said
of
rep titles, I thought you were saying reptiles.
Yeah, me too. Amazing reptiles, all the geckos.
Komodo dragon, all the geckos.
they're showing Joan Micklyn Silver's Between the Lines, which is a movie I love. I've never seen projected. And it's showing it 10 o'clock.
At night?
At night. I know. And I'm like, I can't do that.
Unacceptable.
I'm not going to sit through all of Mikey and Nikki and then watch Between the Lines at 10 o'clock. I can't do that. So yeah, I'm old.
Yeah. Everyone's getting older all the time.
That's true.
Hopefully.
Yeah, that's the prize.
That's
yes.
One of my dad's old things. He goes, I don't like getting old, but it beats the alternative. Like, yes, we all agree on that, Dad. It's like what you're saying is the lesson of human civilization. Like that's...
Your biology, even.
Okay.
All right.
We're going to make this full of spoilers.
Oh, yeah. We figure,
that was my question.
We figure everybody on Earth has seen this movie by now, and if you haven't...
It's been out for 5 entire days.
Yes.
And everyone has watched
this
movie.
It's made over $1 billion internationally.
Here's the thing that I didn't expect about this movie, is that America is a really divided place right now. Look, guys, I don't know if you noticed, America's a real divided place. There's people...
Tell me more.
And I couldn't be happier about that.
Yeah. It's the left and right, red state, blue state, all this stuff. And yet, America has come together in such a unified way around the idea that it would be a breach of sacred trust to spoil anything about this particular movie to anyone in America. And I'm like astounded at how seriously people I don't think of as movie fans, people I don't think of as superhero fans,
right.
Movie reviews that I've read make a big point of saying I'm not going to have any spoilers in this.
I didn't.
And they review like the first 10 minutes of the movie basically because that's what's in the trailer. Like I'm like, this is the first time we've had a real sense of purpose since 9/11, maybe. And the purpose is we cannot allow anyone's experience of Avengers Endgame to be ruined because we've all invested so much time in the series.
Right. Once you've seen 21 films in a row, you know, and the last thing you want is someone coming out of the theater going, and then blah, blah dies, yeah. You know, and...
There was a great tweet where somebody said, you know, I finally settled this longstanding argument about the difference between what are movies and what are TV. It says, you know, dare to breathe even the slightest detail about something and everyone on the internet will crucify you. Movies. Blab out all the details as soon as the closing credits start rolling. TV.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good point. Because there was that big Game of Thrones battle episode right. recently. And it was like, I was like, oh, it's late. I'll probably watch this tomorrow. I'll just check Twitter to see my notifications. Oh, I'll look over there. And it was just like, can't believe this person's still alive. And that happened. That was pretty good. I'm like, well, all right. Okay. Forget it. That's whereas, with Avengers, it was like, okay, everybody, we made a lot of mistakes in our life. We've done a lot of things we're not proud of. And this is our chance
to make it right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're going to take the high ground on this one, the high path. Like it was everything short of the president making a proclamation declaring, like, by executive order, please don't talk about Avengers Endgame.
Nobody wanted to be the Rosenbergs on this one.
Yeah.
They didn't really do anything, I know.
But you feel like, well, it's up to debate. It's historical debate. Okay. There's one of the things that I love about being my generation of liberal is I don't have to pretend that Alger Hiss was innocent, and I'm like, oh good, I don't have a dog in that fight. Like I don't need to waste my time pretending that Alger Hiss was this wonderful man, you know.
Richard Nixon's still the devil.
Oh yeah, yeah. That goes without saying. You're okay with us spoiling?
Yeah,
crazy.
We figured it is the Wednesday after the Thursday night that it opened, and the box office has been staggering, and so we figure the front load of opening weekend has probably like never been this massive.
It makes you wonder how many people. Yeah, after if it makes $1 billion opening weekend, who's left?
Yeah.
After that, aside from, I mean, even like my Flophouse co-hosts, just to plug it again, the Flophouse podcast on Maximum Fun. I was amazed that we recorded an episode this past weekend, and I had seen the movie Thursday night, and they were like, we're seeing it tomorrow. We haven't seen it yet. And I was like, really? You're not seeing it till Sunday of the weekend it opens? Like, that seems crazy to me. Like,
it's Wednesday as we record this. I saw it yesterday.
That boggles my mind. Yeah.
Monday. No, I saw it yesterday. I did not want to be part of the opening crush of people.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because I don't like being next to people in a movie theater.
I totally understand that.
I don't like having I especially don't want strangers right next to me in a movie. I'm not happy at all. I like a little sort of imaginary fort around me that I've built with my mind, and I just would like no one to cross that perimeter. So
he would watch every movie Howard Hughes style if he could.
Indeed, I would.
Super long fingernails.
With my fingernails super dry.
Boxes on his feet.
Yeah. The
top floor of a hotel in Las Vegas. Yeah.
Empty milk bottles. I still had at the ArcLight a half full house, and I thought, who are all you people? Get away from me. It was. Yeah, but it backfired anyway because instead of Avengers this weekend, I went with friends out to the Landmark to see Long Day's Journey in the Night, which is a 2.5-hour Chinese film that I thought, oh, that'll be fine. No, packed house.
All the people who couldn't get into Avengers.
Yeah, they couldn't get into Avengers. Let's see this 2.5-hour Chinese movie instead.
These were all the 80-year-old people who did not want to see Avengers.
Yeah, we were in a... As my friend and neighbor Gary Cotty said to me, are we at a nursing home right now? Yes. Yes, we are.
Hold your art house audience.
Yeah. We will be talking about Long Day's Journey tonight this weekend.
Oh, okay.
When we clean up all the art house things.
Gotcha.
That we, well, not all of them. We're going to talk about some of them here today. Yeah. But
We'll talk about that this weekend. We'll talk about J.T. LeRoy this weekend.
Yeah.
Today we're talking about Avengers Endgame. We are talking about The Burial of Kojo, which is currently streaming on Netflix.
Yes.
And is being distributed by Ava DuVernay's Array Releasing.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Under the Silver Lake, which is finally...
finally been released emerged. And already leaving theaters.
Yeah. Already streaming on Amazon.
All right. Avengers Endgame, go.
Speak,
nerds. You know I don't have time for this.
All right. Do you want to start? Or do you want me to start?
Well, I mean, you know, obviously this is the massive undertaking of, you know, it's the second half of the Infinity War story.
Yeah.
And, you know, we find out that...
Well, number one, we find out no Adam Warlock will not be appearing in these movies, which was the number one disappointment for me of a movie I otherwise enjoyed a lot.
Because they tease him, what, at the end of Guardians 2?
At the 2? End of Guardians 2, but also he is such a fundamental part of the Infinity story in
the comics.
In the comics.
Oh, okay.
Any almost every series that has Infinity in the title is essentially an Adam Warlock and Thanos story. Ah. And Adam Warlock he's one of my favorite characters of all time. He's essentially a kind of space Jesus with a dash of Charlie Brown about him, because he is constantly dying and being brought back to life to save the universe, and he is so tired of it, and he does not want to do it anymore.
Rats.
And he just, yeah, basically, he's like, sits around being like, why do I have to keep doing this? Why must I be called forth when all I desire is the peace of the soul gem? Like this. But he's a great character who has, his powers are not really fully defined in any way, even though he's been around for 40 years. But
hey, look, we got a tease of Tyne Daly as Mrs. Hoag in Spider-Man Homecoming, but I'm still waiting for my damage control movie.
So yeah.
Nobody
yeah,
gets someday. What they want. Anyway, so, okay, so
I was hoping for her in this film.
Right? Yes.
I stood in line in front of her in the post office last week, and I thought to myself, hey, Tyne Daly, it's so cool that you're here with me in the post office today. And will I see you this weekend in Avengers Endgame? I know that you're in the Spider-Man movie. She was not in this
Alas.
One. Spoiler, no, yeah. She's not in this Bummer, one. No. Yeah, so she had it together, too, in the post office. Very well turned out. Like, the hair was good. She had this little vest with pockets. She had all her stuff in the pockets.
When Tyne Daly goes outside, she knows people are looking at
like,
Tyne
really
Daly.
Put together like, lesbian grandmother.
Like, Connecticut lady.
So nice. Yeah.
Nice.
I didn't bother her. You know, I never bother people.
Oh, no, no. Especially not Tyne Daly.
But this movie was Tyne Daly.
She's...
Sadly.
She's Arthur Lawrence's favorite Mama Rose, you know.
Well, that's like a Nobel Prize. There's no greater honor than that.
I know. You can take that to the bank.
Yeah. Or the post office, clearly. As the case may be.
Yep.
With pockets. All right. So the snap has happened, and... there is no undoing it, because that darn Thanos has destroyed all the Infinity Stones, and Thor beheads him in a fit of pique, but that doesn't really help anybody feel better. We jump ahead 5 years, which that for me was my first big gasp of the film, because usually you think, okay, they're going to fix this jam and on we're going to go, but no. So it's 5 years later, and then for a while there it was like watching The Leftovers, which I love.
Which is an interesting way to take it, but they went a little too far with it in
you
that
think?
New York is pictured as deserted. And I was like, "There's even if half of New York is gone, that's still 4 million people living in New York." And you see, it's either Yankee or City Field, Yankee Stadium or City Field, and it's fallen into ruins.
Yeah.
And it's like, you better believe they would have fielded a new team within like 3 months. Like, that is too valuable a brand to keep fallow. It's not like those Olympic stadiums in Greece where they just let them, after the Olympics are over, they just let nature take its course again. But I like that they force these characters to like sit in that.
Yeah.
Feeling for a while, that feeling of like failure, because you as the audience know there's no way this series, it's not going to be 3 hours of them dealing with the trauma of missing their loved ones. Like, so let's let them feel that a little bit, you know?
You're right. I think if they'd skated past it too much, that would have felt glib, or it would diminish the stakes of the whole thing.
But it was like this is the second time I'm mentioning 9/11 on this podcast, where I apologize, but like in New York at that time, like New York felt, we all felt shaken.
Mm,
but
right.
It was still packed with people. There were still people everywhere. And it was, it just felt like there was that was, of all the things in this movie about a god and a talking raccoon that fight a giant alien with six magic gems, that was the one part where I was like, hold on a second. Like, did everyone leave? Like,
point of order.
Like, the city is too crowded. Like, so now it would have this number of people a city should have.
Just
like,
fit nicely, yeah.
Now I sound like Thanos. Like, this is the right number of people for the city.
Yeah, as that was one thing that I thought the first 30 minutes of the movie was he wrong? Like, someone even says, you know, like, fewer boats, the water's cleaner, you know, here come the whales.
The whales, exactly. And, that's Thomas Malthus, you know.
The climate change is going to slow because of this, so I guess thanks, Thanos.
There's a guy in Captain America's support group who talks about, I was on this date last night, and my boyfriend cried, and I was like, you know that there's part of in the back of his mind that was like, I would never have been able to get a table at this restaurant if Thanos hadn't snapped his fingers. And the other thing is, it was never clear, it doesn't really matter, but I'm only realizing it now, whether the rest of the people in the world understood why everyone had disappeared, because the Avengers know. And in the Marvel Universe, the Avengers are famous. You know, like, it's not like a Batman-type thing where they're like, the Bat, that's a
in
legend.
In the shadows, yeah. Right. Oh, so you think, like, Captain America would have a press conference and sort of...
Yeah, here's my
PowerPoint presentation.
You're probably wondering why your family dissolved. Anyway, it all goes back to this guy. Like, I wonder if that... It's something that I didn't... It doesn't need to be addressed, but I'm only thinking about it now. Like, do people know?
Or that's an interesting question.
Or is it the leftovers where they're just like...
We don't know.
They don't know, and Captain America's like, I feel like I should tell them, but then they're going to know I screwed up.
I bet they did, just because I think the leftovers is all about sort of the despair of living in a chaotic universe. Mm-hmm. And so they would have to, I'm sure, walk people through it. Now, you bring up the guy in the support group, which at the moment when
gay Twitter is all a buzz.
Well, that's the thing.
This.
When it happened, yeah. I was like, that's cool. But then, like, I started seeing all these articles of the Russo Brothers about the yes, we really wanted to get a gay character in the robot. I'm like, really?
He doesn't have a name.
He doesn't have a name. It's a blink and you miss it. It's probably dubbed in Chinese to be not gay anymore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In the Chinese, he's like, when I met this beautiful heterosexual woman. Well,
exactly, yes. And to top it all, frankly, it's not even the first gay character in an MCU movie, because Josie Tota in Spider-Man Homecoming plays the little gay boy.
Correct.
Who's playing F. Mary Kill about superheroes with all the girls.
And Valkyrie, even though we don't really...
She's not canonically bi in the movies.
We don't see it much. And then
seems pretty clear, though, right?
Danae Gurira plays... What's her character's name?
I never remember that one.
When her battle warrior special lady friend dies at the end of Black Panther, and the grief on her face is right and immediate, you're thinking, oh, they were a couple.
In the comics...
Why didn't you tell us?
In the movies, they were comrades in arms. You know.
The important thing is they finally struck a blow for all sorts of equal rights in the movie by acknowledging
that. I felt validated as
a middle-aged white guy in a support group. Anyway, so then a random mouse happens to bring Ant-Man back from the quantum or the whatever the... Call. I'm sorry.
Quantum.
Oh, wow. 10 years. The first time you're ever going to have to bleep yourself.
I mean, I'm so glad that I'm here to see it and that it was for the right reason, which is because, one, they made up this quantum realm thing when they should have been talking about the negative zone. That's right, Marvel fans. If you're going to go to an alternate dimension in a Marvel movie, I guess they can't because it's a Fantastic Four
property. I was
going to
say, I think Fox owns the negative zone, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's too bad. That's why... But they're not using
Disney's
it.
Disney's got it back now.
Yeah, that's true. Finally, I can do that Annihilus movie that I've always wanted to see, which is not a lie. I love that character. He's a character who kills everything alive because he thinks that it's going to kill him first. So he wants to be the only living thing so he can finally feel safe.
The movie's turned Galactus into a cloud. So if you think you're getting an Annihilus movie...
He probably won't be a robot bug the way I thought he would be. It brings Ant-Man back.
Yeah, brings Ant-Man back, and he figures out that to travel... that small is also to travel through time, because he felt like he was gone for a few minutes and he was gone for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And so then they come up with this wacky time travel theory, which of course Tony Stark manages to put the pieces together and figure out. And the movie then tries to set up how time travel works and doesn't work in a way that I didn't ever quite buy, but I just sort of went with it. Tilda Swinton explained it to me.
It felt like one of those things where they were like, look, this is in here just so that you know we're playing with some sense of rules.
Right.
And we can't just do anything. We're always about everything.
We can't kill baby Hitler.
Yeah, exactly. The, although, why not? People always say, well, he's just a baby. Yeah, we know who he's going to be. Like, come on. It's easier to kill him if he's a baby. He's not going to fight back. But the this is something that I like time travel stuff a lot. And, like, I've been wanting the only reason this bugs me is because my pitch for another Avengers movie would have been make the villain Kang and make it a time travel movie because we haven't seen them do time travel yet. But now we've seen it, so right. Kang will no longer – well, that pitch is gone. Sorry, Kang. Sorry, Kang the Conqueror. But they set up their time travel rules, and they say, like, okay, we need the stones. Mm-hmm. So we need to go back to a time when the stones existed since Thanos destroyed them, and we'll bring them back. And by a sheer happenstance, it means we get to visit –
All the previous movies,
which was like, to be honest, afterwards, I was like, oh, that make like, of course they would do that. But in the moment, I was like, I never would have thought they would do that. And we're doing the plot right now, but I'll just say it real quick.
Sure.
I really enjoyed this movie.
Yes.
And it delivered exactly what I wanted from this movie. But it's hard for me to separate the feelings I have for these characters as characters that I have spent. It's one of these things where people are like, well, we've been watching these movies for 10 years. It's like, well, I've been living with these characters for almost 30 years. Like, these are characters, like, they're so, like, I'm a full Marvel zombie. Like, I'm a follower of the House of Ideas, true believer, Excelsior, all that, face in front. And it's like, they're so in my blood that there were a couple things.
You're a friend of all Marvel.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I wish I could have been part of the Merry Marvel Marching Society, but I was born too late. I never got to win a no prize, any of that stuff. The two opportunities I had to meet Stan Lee, I screwed up and didn't get to meet him. But one of them, it was like I could either go meet Stan Lee or I could go see Tommy Wiseau speak on a panel. And I was like, it was a hard choice. And I was like, maybe I'll get another chance to see Stan Lee. And I don't really regret it because it was an amazing experience seeing Tommy Wiseau speak. But
another one of my post office friends, by the way.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. With some frequency.
I imagine him as someone who's always mailing lots of packages.
He is.
Like, he has a mail crate of his own.
He has a lot of packages that he's mailing. Yeah.
Okay. I think you need to write a play about Tommy Wiseau and Tyne Daly having lunch after meeting each other at the post office.
Tyne and Tommy, that would be wonderful. Yeah. They're good friends. They met at the post office. Now they're good, like how in Being John Malkovich, Charlie Sheen and John Malkovich are good friends, and he calls him Malcatraz. and John Malkovich calls Charlie Sheen Mushin. They're friends like that. But the thing I've been hearing about this movie is people being like, well, there's a lot of fan service in it. It's like, yeah. You're right. But how can you do this kind of movie without fan service when it's literally this kind of culminate? But anyway, that's just a long tangent to me to mention that like any feeling I have about this movie is like, I have to do the, who's the critic who would say like, I have to recognize I'm a person watching a movie who has their own things they're bringing to it. Like, can't remember who it is, but
Andre Bazin,
maybe
Joel Siegel. I don't know.
No, it was probably Gene Siskel. That's it. Or probably Gene Shalit. Like one of those, one of the genes. But it was like that. This movie is so much. Each movie in this series, more or less. There's some that I skipped out on. It's like, oh, this is the movie I wanted to see when I was like 12 or 13.
Yes.
And this is very much the movie I want to see when I was 13.
No, totally. I mean, like, The Avengers is still my favorite of these movies because I feel like Joss Whedon gets comics the way that, like, Spielberg and Lucas get serials, you know? And it gave me all the same pleasurable things. And this movie, while I don't have it as high on the list, it reminded me a lot of, like, the Avengers annual.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
It would come out in the summer. And it's that whole structure of like, we're all together, there's a big conflict, and then we all have to divide into teams and go do a thing, and then we all come back together again for the big battle that's going to be a two-page splash page. You know?
I was just reading a storyline called Operation Galactic Storm that I'd never read. That's a 19-part story from the early 90s where it's exactly that, where it's like, the Kree and the Shi'ar are going to war with each other. Well, let's split up into three teams. We've all got our different things that are going to go on in each other's books. And then we're all going to come back to get, like, and this was that. Yeah. You're right. It really captured that structure. I hadn't even thought about that.
We were talking about this on Who Shot You, and, like, you know, like Dre was bringing up opera structure, and people talked about television, which, of course, this really fits into, like I've called this movie a season finale in a lot of ways. But it very much is operating. I think what's interesting about the MCU is that they have adopted this sort of comic book thing of, you know, like, if you want to know what's going on in, you know, Legends or Crisis on Infinite Earths or Secret Wars or whatever, you have to buy all the individual titles.
Yeah,
you know?
You can almost see the asterisk on the screen that says, like, see Thor number 167. Like,
exactly.
Oh, that's when that guy last showed up.
You know, and so they brought that into this world of interconnected movies the way that comics fans are used to, because, you know, there'll be some, like, you know, Darkest Night or, you know, whatever kind of thing that, you know, the Flashpoint, you know, that takes place over a bunch of different titles. So it's like, yeah, you want to come see these Avenger movies, you better be up on your Captain Marvel and your Black Panther and your Iron Man.
Although,
and, you know, all the
I will say, I still haven't seen Captain Marvel because...
Sexist.
Because I hate women. it's also like, I get, like we were talking about how I dad earlier, because I'm a dad, that like... I only have so many movies I get to go see in the theaters. Like, I'm not gonna get, I'm not gonna use that shit on Captain Marvel when Avengers Endgame is coming out. But also, I hate to say it, guys, never been a fan of the Captain Marvel character. Not because she's a woman, because her personality is something that I don't find it's like in the comics. She's always like ultra military and often wrong. And so, like, she's the one in the recent Civil War II storyline who was like, we should probably lock people up before they commit crimes. And everyone's like, no, we shouldn't do that. We should probably go kill Bruce Banner just in case he's going to turn into the Hulk again. Like, no. So when the movie came out, I was like, I don't need to see this character.
I like the Carol Danvers, who's the editor of Woman Magazine.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Where did that one go?
Well, I like the Captain Marvel who became Photon, who like, Rambo, what's her name? Monica?
Yes,
Rambo?
And who... It's set up that we're probably going to get her in the next Captain Marvel.
I hope so. I like her so much more than Carol Danvers. But it's one of those things where it's like, oh, I don't like this character as a character.
Right.
And I would so much rather see like a Silver Sable movie or something like that. But
or a Kamala Khan movie for that matter.
I mean, a Kamala Khan movie would be. I'm so amazed, and it's because she's such a strong character. I'm amazed at how quickly Kamala Khan jumped from new character to very heavily merchandise character.
Hmm.
Like when I was a kid, it was like, oh, I love this X-Men character. I hope someday they make a toy of it. Like, maybe someday we'll have a Rogue toy.
Right.
And now, there's, like, Lego sets for Kamala Khan as Ms. Marvel. And I'm like, that's amazing. That's so fast.
I remember how long I had to wait around, you know, in the hopes of getting a Ted Kord Blue Beetle action figure.
He's back, right? I was going to say rest in peace.
Is he alive again?
I'm not sure.
I've lost track.
I don't know. I remember when he got shot in the head. But...
What's happening?
Back to this movie that we all saw.
What's happening?
Okay, but sorry. There was part of me that was glad that spoiler alert, that Captain Marvel does not play too enormous a role in this because she exists basically to blow things up at important moments and then go, I got space to deal with, and then fly off again.
But she does get to, at the end, I think, sort of fight Thanos as effectively as anybody else, if not maybe a little more so.
Oh, sure. A movie that, a Marvel movie nobody seems to like but me. It's not great, but... When I first saw Iron Man 2, that was when I realized, like, oh, this feels like an issue either in the middle of a storyline or between storylines, and I really like that about it. Like, they're really going for this comic book structure, because you can have a movie like that where it's like, not every movie is the most important thing that happens to one of these characters.
Sure.
Most of them are. But with that one, it was like, all right, Iron Man was issues like 1 through 6. Now it's 7 through 10. I'm still trying to figure out what this book is all about. You know?
We're going to throw in some other, like, some interesting villains and Black Widow.
Let's throw in the characters that we're going to spin off. They can't, like, Iron Man's rogues gallery is terrible. He has, three good enemies, I guess?
Well, the Mandarin.
The Mandarin, which... who they did in a way I did not care for.
Oh, I kind of liked that, just because I think you can't do the Mandarin of the comics.
You don't make him Fu Manchu, but you, like, you can still make him... I still would rather see a guy with 10 magic rings from an alien spaceship than, like, as much as I love Guy Pearce, then Guy Pearce is, like, another evil corporate guy.
Right.
But he has the Mandarin. He's got Fin Fang Foom, who...
Is that his?
Well, he predates Iron Man, but by default, at a certain point, he just started being an Iron Man villain.
Okay.
He's not anymore.
Gotcha.
And he has... You know, like Titanium Man or Crimson Dynamo.
Well, Whiplash.
He has Whiplash. Whiplash is pretty... I guess he's got Living Laser. Again, his rogues gallery is shallow.
Yeah, not the best.
Compared to, like, you've got your diamond-level rogues galleries, your Batman, Spider-Man rogues galleries.
Sure.
And then you go down quite a bit, and then you've got Iron Man, and then you go down even further, and that's when you have, like, the Alpha Flight rogues gallery, where I don't think I can name any of them. But
is Batroc the Leaper
not being able to
an
name
Iron Man
anybody?
Batroc the Leaper is a Captain America.
Oh, you're
villain.
Right. I'm so sorry.
And what's great about him is, one, he lives up to his name. He leaps around all the time. And two, he's only in it for the money. So if he's losing to Captain America, he'll just leave. He'll be like, this isn't worth it. He'll just get up and leave.
Au revoir.
There's a moment in the film
Oh, right, the movie. The movie, yeah, yeah.
When Elizabeth Olsen is coming after Thanos.
Yeah.
And she says something like, "You took everything from me." And he said,
"I don't even know who you are.
I don't even know who you are." And my first thought was, "I don't know who you are either." Like, I know you're Elizabeth Olsen, and I've seen you in a couple of the other movies doing things, but I have forgotten your name. And I don't know what your comic book name is, just you're Elizabeth Olsen doing things in the movies. Like, she throws a ball, right?
She's Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch! That's yeah. right. But she sat through the whole rest of the movie going, what's Elizabeth Olsen's
she
name?
She has powers that were originally thought to be witchcraft, what but wound up being do? A mutant chaos
She has a mutant
power?
Hex power, which affects chaos probabilities. But in the comics, she did study under Agatha Harkness to be a witch.
That's true, yes.
So,
yes.
Like, she is kind of made, just because that's her name. It was one of those things where it's like, we named her Scarlet Witch. I guess she better be a witch now. But like,
it's like when you're an MD and you know how to do acupuncture.
Yes. Know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The reason I can't remember her name, and I just realized this, I just figured out why.
Because you think Scarlett Johansson.
No. I think about the old 70s version of the board game Clue, where Miss Scarlet had a red dress.
Oh.
And I thought, if you're such a Scarlet Witch, how come you're not wearing red things?
In the comics, like, she does.
Well, why am I not getting that mnemonic that I need so that I can remember her? Because I'm not like you guys. Like, I appreciate you guys. I need you guys in my life to tell me things and help me understand and point out who's doing what to whom and why. But come on, movie.
Well, I really wish they would put more. The Scarlet Witch
because
in her old,
be.
Like, was it wimple? What do you
yeah,
call
she
that
she had, like,
thing?
A head thing.
She looked
thing.
Like an abbess.
I guess it is a wimple. I never even thought about that before. Yeah, and varying levels of covering over her legs.
I right. saw
as little
all the
as
people.
None and sometimes tights.
I saw all the people that came into that theater with me yesterday. Half of them looked remarkably, demonstrably stupider than me. And so I cannot be the dumbest person in the audience.
This was when
I need you to tell me, hello, my name is Scarlet Witch, Thanos. You have taken everything away from
the
me.
The thing is, I don't know if they ever really call her Scarlet Witch in the movies. They just call her Wanda.
Wanda, oh, that's
Because her name
true.
Is Wanda
that's
Maximoff.
A more confusing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Oh, it gets worse. Because
if she was called Wanda, you'd think she was a fish.
They mentioned, when they talk about Black Widow at one point in the movie, someone called her Nat, and it took me like four beats to be like, who's Nat? Which one is Nat? And then I was like, Natasha, that's Scarlet.
Did you think like the
Black
Nat
Widow.
Was a hero with a G?
Yes, he's a Black Widow.
Am I missing? Is
Kneel
the,
before the power of
is
the
Evangeline
Nat.
Lilly the Nat? No, she's the Wasp. Yeah, okay.
The what you're talking about is the experience that we had when my wife and I went to see Interstellar.
Yeah.
And she got so mad. She's like, people who are dumber than me liked this movie. And I didn't understand it. I don't like that. And I was like, and I felt so bad because the 10 minutes in the movie, I'm like, oh, it's a time travel thing. And he's sending a message from the future because I've just seen that story so many times.
Right.
And I was like, no, it's okay. It's just people who have watched a lot of these movies. They kind of get it because they've seen movies about that stuff before. Like,
they don't get the actual science parts.
Yeah, yeah. Like if I, her frame of reference is much more like Sense and Sensibility or, right. You know, Dirty Dancing. So I get why she's not gonna waste her time on time travel movies.
Who is that, and why are there two of them? And,
yeah.
And what's going on? Yeah.
So yeah, no. Getting back to 10 points ago, it was. I think a lot of fun that they take this opportunity to sort of loop-de-loop through the rest of
yeah.
the series,
and you get like Cap fighting Cap,
yes.
which is fantastic, and like you get to see them, like they. Captain America gets into an elevator with the same people that he had an elevator fight with in
Winter
Soldier,
doesn't fight them because he knows to say Hail Hydra.
Yeah, like there's a lot of like neat twists on it, but there was also a lot of it. There's a lot of this movie, and there are a number of scenes where I'm like, that must have been fun to make. You didn't need to put it in. The whole scene where Ant-Man is turning into a baby and an old man, I was,
oh,
like,
right, yes.
I was like, that's really funny. This, you could excise this entirely and I would never notice it. Like, there's no reason for this to be in the movie.
For a movie that's 3 hours long, from the press coverage, you'd think a movie had never been 3 hours
that's
long.
The amazing right. people are like, 3 hours? all right, I guess I'm dying during the movie. Like, I guess it's the last thing I'll see.
Dave had a tweet that cracked me up. He was like, well, I guess I reviewed Ex Libris all wrong because I didn't tell people when to go pee.
Well, it's like, well, you were mentioning Long Day's Journey Tonight, and you're saying 2.5 hour movie. Yeah. And it's like, that's shorter than this one. Like, yeah. And a half hours is a brisk movie compared to Avengers Endgame.
But I have to say, but the only time I felt it is, again, in the let's all split up and go do a thing, like, one person does a thing, like you know, Thor goes off to Asgard and has a poignant moment with his mother, who's no longer
Thor, who's now out of shape and feels chunky, despairing.
Chunky Thor.
Yeah.
And,
getting to the, I'm interrupting here.
No, please.
Sorry. My favorite parts of this film, other than Iron Goop Gwynny, which is like, when Captain Lady comes back with her short hair and all the other women come together and Gwynny shows up in her Iron Man suit, I was like, I was so overjoyed. But my feelings were, I've never been moved in one of these movies. Like, I've never felt like these films were capable of moving me.
Mm. Have you seen Spider-Man 2?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then that's the only arrow I have in my quiver.
I have a very cold space inside of me. But everybody going back in time and individually connecting or not quite connecting with the people they lost, each time it happened, I went, oh, oh. Oh, he let him touch her, please. And then it was like, whoop, you have to go away.
Yeah.
And I was like,
So Thor and his mom, and, you know, Tony Stark meets his dad on the day that Tony Stark is born.
It's amazing how fake John Slattery's mustache looked.
Oh,
that looked very weird.
That was the not good de-aging. Like, Michael Douglas's was pretty good.
I think they didn't have to stick around with it for very long.
I think they also just cut and paste footage from the streets of San Francisco.
It was like the mustache that they removed from what's his name's face in
Henry Cavill.
Yeah, from Henry Cavill's face. Right. It was like they just plastered onto, like, Jezler's on, like, that mustache doesn't really fit his face. Like, I'm on the record as saying digitally erasing that mustache for Justice League was well worth it, because that mustache in Mission Impossible is amazing.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
the mustache makes that character in Mission Impossible. But
Needs its own movie.
Yeah. So, called Mustache Impossible. Yeah, that's great.
Did we talk about that when we talked about Mission Impossible?
I'm sure,
like,
we did.
Like, the mustache is the character.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
But
as Stanislavski would say.
But yeah, they all have those, and like Captain America glimpses his old flame that he hasn't seen since he saw her when she was old, right?
Yes.
And she had since died in his timeline. Like those things were really, like, I was like, oh, this is an example of what this type of movie should be doing, where it's playing off, like, with both the time travel into old scenes and those characters, where it's like, we're playing off the experiences we've had with these characters.
Right.
And it's so much more exciting to me than, like, the way the X-Men series works, where it's just like,
and now we're just gonna switch everything.
Yeah, here's another thing for the X-Men to do. Like, here's some more X-Men. Like, I haven't seen the last couple X-Men movies because I'm like, and I probably won't see this next one because I'm like, I don't have that same feeling about the way they're doing it. And it's just each movie is like, guess what? The X-Men are back. Here's the thing they're doing.
The X-Men movies, to digress.
I mean, those are not very good.
It's become like, you know, you're asking about, like, you know, DC, is Blue Beetle alive? Like, if you're just going to reboot everything every couple of years, then there's nothing for me to get invested in, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, the X-Men have, through time travel and whatnot, have completely changed everything so many times. Now, like, I don't even know which X-Men we're talking about at this point, you know, like, what version.
Which is ironically the same experience of reading an X-Men comic. So it's actually very accurate to my experience growing up reading comics in the 90s and being like, wait, so who's which guy? So is Strife Cyclops' son, or is Cable Cyclops' son? Like, which one went to the future and came back? I don't understand.
So what I was going to say before, though, is, like, when they start having those moments and they're landing, but, like, there's so many of those kind of, like, little vignettes in a row where when they cut to, and now Hawkeye and Black Widow are off to get the Soul Stone. That was the one moment where I kind of felt like, like, can we move it along, please?
How many of these?
Even though that scene wound up also having its own emotional payoff, you know?
The, you reminded me of something that I want to make sure. I'm just going to say out of order, but I want to make sure to say, which is, so, big spoiler. They do it. Everyone comes back. You know, not they do it, Hawkeye and Black Widow. That's a different, like, they save the day and everyone comes back. And Hawkeye, since his wife and children have disappeared, he got hit the hardest.
Right.
His whole family disappeared. He's changed his hair and gotten a bunch of tattoos. Now he's just killing bad guys because he's mad that they're still alive and his family is not. And he's become... Yeah.
Notably, all in other countries, and they're all people of color, as somebody pointed out on Twitter.
And he's become his character of Ronin from the Avengers comics, where a guy who has never had any connection with Japanese culture at all has decided to take on that mantle for himself. But yeah, that's true. He's killing, what, in Mexico and in Japan. But, He has this crazy haircut, and when his wife comes back, and you don't hear what they're saying, they're just tearfully, they're so glad, and I kept imagining the next thing she's there is like, what'd you do to your hair? What is wrong with you?
What's
like,
with this?
I get vaporized for 5 years, and I come back, and you look crazy. Like, what? But too many side quests, and it takes too long. But then,
the finale's worth it.
The finale is like it's, and the finale of, the, like you can I'm. So I'm going to compare it to this recent Game of Thrones episode, which will also date this episode. But the where it was a big battle between all these zombies and you have you guys watched it? Do you watch that show?
No, I don't watch the show.
Okay, it's all these zombies and they're fighting, and I got so bored of it because like how many scenes of just walls of zombies hitting the same characters, and then those characters being engulfed in zombies, and then the next shot they're up on their feet hacking away at zombies. I'm like, I feel like I'm in. Like someone keeps dying in the game and coming back and redoing the level again. But this one, they did such a good job of choreographing it in a way the Marvel movies usually do not do.
Yes. I was very, very happy that spatial relationships between people felt like, you know, not just felt like I could follow them.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew where people were. If they were fighting someone, I knew why they were fighting someone, other than when Scarlet Witch is. But the
Act 3 fight is where these things usually fall apart, but this time it doesn't.
Everything felt, you know, visually coherent. And that is often, when the big fight comes up, I think to myself, well, this is when I'm going to go to the bathroom because I have no idea what's about to happen. And it'll just be a blur of stuff. And this was never a blur of anything.
Yeah.
It was always completely clear who was doing what to whom and why.
It felt like there's an old type of comic book fight where team fights where you're like, each character has their objective and they're like, I'm going to trip this guy with my ice beam. Oh, no, he fell over. He went over there. Now I got to do this. And, like, there's a real coherency to it. And in a lot of modern comics, the fight scenes are essentially one two-page spread where you have the two-page spread where all the characters are jumping at each other. And then the two-page spread where it's just a mass of bodies. And then often what happens...
A cloud with arms and legs.
Essentially that. And, like, and just... And, like,
Andy Capp's wife's rolling kid.
That's the next... They need to do the Sunday Comics-averse. And it's like, we gotta get together Andy Capp's wife, gotta get together Nirmal, like, all the characters from her.
Tootsie.
You know, Mama, all the characters. But
Kathy.
Yeah, Kathy. Well, Kathy's the Nick Fury of the group. Yeah. And each time... But this, it was real, like, this was more like an old style where it's like, okay, each of these characters, there are arcs to the moments in this fight.
Yeah.
Each of the characters has their little moment. And the main issue that I was worried about going into it, which was that these other new characters have gotten so popular that it's going to be, that they're going to take the spotlight away. The movie, like, gives a little bit of that to people because those characters get big entrances, but it felt like you were like, okay, this movie is about Captain America, Iron Man, and Thor. And them, they're on this, and you know,
Hulk, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch,
those guys are like, and Hulk, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch are like the next tier, and they get stuff in Ant-Man too. But like that, especially the fight where Captain America is getting just the garbage kicked out of him by Thanos. And why wouldn't he be? Thanos is much smarter than him, and Captain America just like each time he gets knocked down, and he knows he has to get back up again, and he knows it's going to be so painful. Like that felt so. I was like, I'm seeing the personality of the character coming out through this fight, as opposed to the other ones where it's just like, laser, 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 like whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Chris Evans sort of lives this.
He's like...
Doesn't he? I mean, like...
On Twitter, he certainly does.
He feels like he's super invested in in this character to me. Like, whenever I hear him talking about it or on Twitter, like you said, I just think, are we going to need, like, exit therapy for you after this is over? Because he's really, like, he feels it.
Do we need to cast you as a Bond villain just to, like, you know?
Just to shake him out? But I feel like the two big casting coups of the Marvel movies were Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, because it was instantly like, okay, we're taking this somewhat, we're not taking it seriously like DC, everything's life and death, but we're taking it seriously like this is going to be a real movie. You know, whereas the Marvel, this is not Roger Corman's Fantastic Four movie, and it's not
the Captain Billy America Zane movie. Is the Phantom.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some people need to slam evil. What do you do? I remember seeing an ad for the Phantom on the back of a magazine about comic strips, and it was like the blockbuster hit of 1990, whatever. And I was like, even as knowing that, I was like, this is a prediction that will not come true. And the other casting coup was like getting Chris Evans, who. That the Captain America character is such a hard one to make work, even in the comics, because he has to be always idealistic without being stodgy, and he has to be old-fashioned without feeling stodgy, and he pulls it off so well.
Yeah, otherwise you're Sam the Eagle.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. And then you're doing jokes about like, well, these hippies are. Like, and Chris Evans has done such a good job of making this, and the writing as well. I mean, I should, especially as a writer, I should say like a lot of it's in the writing, but making this character someone who is like, timeless in a way, where it's like, oh, I'm not about America in the 40s. I'm about like these values America says it
America's promise.
Yeah. But he just does it really well. And there's this was the moment. There was one moment I've been waiting for the entire series. Adam Warlock. That didn't happen. There's another moment. The second moment I was waiting for the entire series was literally Captain America picking up Thor's hammer, because he is the only mortal on Earth who's truly worthy, because he has that idealism in him. And so that was like the one. I was with an audience. It was the Thursday night preview audience. So like these are the people who are diehards anyway.
Right.
And the audience was like, I remember we sat down and the lights went down. One of the friends I was with was like, wait, people are going to be cheering to this whole movie, aren't they? It's like, yeah, sorry, dude. But that was one of the few moments where like cheers came out, where I was like, I felt myself make a sound as well. Where it was like, oh, I've been waiting for this to happen this whole time, because it's like it's a validation of Captain America, and it's a validation of Thor, a character who until the movies I've never really cared about or liked, in that it's like, I love Captain America so much more that it's like, oh, if Captain America is using Thor's hammer, that means Thor must be cool too. You know, like, that was one of those moments where it only works because of the history of the characters that people have now had through these movies. And if it had happened at the end of like a 2.5 hour first Avengers movie, people would have been like, oh, cool. But instead, this was like, what? So there are a lot of like moments like that during, and they played it up for all it's worth. The like, well, I guess we're on our own. Did you forget about me? Black Panther walks through like, and what about me, boss? And then like the other Avengers walk through like, and they spaced that out so well. And like,
you know. Did you cry?
I did not, which surprised me because again, like the first two Spider-Man, Sam Raimi's movies, I cried in both of those. The Incredibles makes me cry. Iron Giant, I cry at. I mean, which is not strictly a superhero movie, but it's that kind of movie.
Sure.
But
right.
Like I cried. I'll tell you when I cried in the Marvel movies was in the first Avengers movie, two times, which was when there's that fight in the woods between Captain America and Thor and Iron Man, and then at the end when there's that shot that where they're all together for the first time back to back and the camera circles
around. Oh yeah.
And it was not crying about the content so much as like I'm seeing this thing that I've always dreamed about, and I'm seeing it done so well. It looks real to me, and not just like special effects real, but it has the spirit of it. And so I thought this would happen in this one, but I did not cry. And it might be that like a lot of those movies came out before I had children, so I'm like, my tears are now reserved for like real life things. I don't know.
I did not cry, but I did have a when Peter Parker and Tony Stark reunite.
Oh, yeah.
That was just like, no.
Well, that was the other cheering moment for me, was when Spider-Man came back. Mm. Only because Spider-Man's the greatest character in the history of fictional literature, and in my opinion. And he's a superhero who embodies the flaws of the reader, but represents an ethical value system that is impossible to uphold, but the drive to do so is what defines him. And he has to struggle and face punishment because of it. But
How
do you write that?
Yeah.
You just make him like a goofy guy. But that's also, that's not Spider-Man. There's no individual issue I can point to really where I'm like, here you'll see everything of Spider-Man. It's like, that's 50 years of this character.
Sure.
And that's why I when the movies first started being very successful, people, I remember someone being like, isn't Kevin Feige a genius that he's been able to figure this out? And I'm like, what, that he figured out the way to do these characters is the way they've been successful for a half a century? Like, there's something genius in that, I guess, but that, like, these characters have so many years of existence baked into them.
Right, but if it were that easy to do well on film, somebody would have done it well on film by now. I mean,
not necessarily.
Or at least somebody would have done it the way he's done it, I think.
Maybe. Yeah. But there's each of these characters, it's like, it's the opposite of, I'm always amazed by the first ever Star Wars movie, because you go into it with no knowledge of anything in this whole universe, and by the end of it, you're like, I love these characters, and I really want them to succeed,
right,
and I want to see more of them. And the Marvel characters are the exact opposite of that, where even if the audience doesn't know anything, everything's been worked out about these characters. There is no, for the person working on the movie, if they want to take advantage of that, and they should, as obviously they should with these, they did with these movies, it's like, oh, I don't have to ask any unasked questions about these characters, because there has been a half century, or in Captain America's case, almost a century,
right,
like, of people actively asking these questions about these characters. And so, like, when, so that was my other one, Spider-Man showed up, just because I love him so much. And I was like, hey, good, he's back. Oh, my boy is back. My boy, he's returned. That pays off as something that bugged me about Spider-Man Homecoming, which was, there was so much Iron Man in it. And I got resentful because I was like, Spider-Man doesn't need Iron Man to be cool. Like, Spider-Man's the best. He doesn't need all this. When he had that little flying, talking spider that comes out of his costume, I was like, he doesn't need that garbage. Come on. All he needs is costume. Or not even that. But that, they did such a good job of building up that relationship. So that, yeah. There was a part of me, though, when Iron Man is dying, again, spoiler alert, when he's dying and Spider-Man is like, huh, what? I was like, well, his wife is there too, right? So maybe Iron Man's wife should get the moment with him.
When do we see the grieving wife?
And then Gwyneth, like, pulls him aside and takes his place, and I'm like, okay, good, thank you. That, like, because I'm sure there's a version of that movie that, I wonder if there was, like, a woman involved in the process of mine who's like, well, maybe his wife should get a moment with him. Because I'm sure there's legions of guys who'd be like, isn't it heartbreaking that Spider-Man is losing his mentor? And meanwhile, like, they're like, well, maybe we'll give him his moment, and then we'll have his relative who created a child with him.
The person who loves him the most in this world.
Yeah. And then Iron Man sacrifices himself and they save the day, and then there's just 20 to 45 minutes of tying up loose ends before all those stars get to sign the movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which they did in, was it Star Trek The Undiscovered Country?
Oh, did they do that?
I think
that makes sense.
They all autographed the screen at the end. And I sat and counted. There are over 50 people whose names I know.
Yeah.
In this film.
There were so many small reappearances and characters. I'm like, this must have been the most expensive movie in the history of movies.
Yeah.
Just from talent alone.
Right.
Like, I think Todd Alcott called it it's a mad, 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 mad world of superhero movies.
I mean, that is totally true and also fitting, because It's a Mad, 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 Mad World is a great movie that, like, is almost better for the fact that a lot of it doesn't work. And it's just like, there's the moment, the funniest moment for me in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World is when they're like, call the fire department. They're here. And you pan over and it's the Three Stooges and the firemen. It's the funniest joke in the world. And that's the entirety of Avengers Endgame. Because it's like, that joke is only funny because you know who the Three Stooges are and you know they're going to screw it all up. And Avengers Endgame only works because you're like, oh, okay, I know these characters. Like, it was a big milestone, I think, that people stopped seriously saying, yeah, it's really good, but it doesn't really stand on its own as a movie. And it's like, yeah, it's not what it's meant to do. Like, it doesn't, it's understood now.
But I think along the way, like, you know, Black Panther especially, and Captain Marvel to an extent, were ones where if you didn't go in knowing the other ones, you might miss some jokes or Easter eggs here and there, but you could follow it and you'd know what was going on. I mean, like, Black Panther, except for, like, after the credits when, like, the Winter Soldier shows, when Bucky's there, they don't really, they barely coexist with the rest
kind
of the Marvel
universe. Yeah.
But yeah, this one, you better, like, have seen all the movies and maybe checked the wiki pages lately.
And remembered. There were certainly characters that popped up where I was like, oh yeah, right. I forgot about that. And I didn't see Thor Dark. I still haven't seen Thor Dark World. So, like, when they're like, yeah, we got to go get that thing, but it's inside the bloodstream of my lady love. I was like, all right. Whatever. Because my experience growing up with comics was like,
you just bleep right over it.
Yeah, or like, okay, well, that's the thing I don't know, so I'll just deal with, like, when Spider-Man would be like, oh, well, I just remember the night Gwen Stacy died, and I'm like, someday I'll read that story about Gwen Stacy. But...
Or there would, you know, again, that's where the asterisk happens.
Yeah. Where they, those were so, I mean, the thing that these movies, it's like, they, the exciting thing for young people, at least for me, with the Marvel Universe was like, I have no control over my real life and the real world. I don't understand it. And here's this fictional universe that I can understand everything about. And it is designed to help me figure out where I need to go for these answers. And especially pre-internet, it was like, oh, okay, I have to write down this issue number so I can track it down
right.
at a con and then like and buy the back issue so I can do and like the movies have now I guess there's so many movies that do that, like the Tolkien movies and stuff are like that too, where it's you and the Star Wars movies where it's like, oh, I don't like the real world. I guess I'll live in this fictional world. But but they replicate that so well. But it's that's all I feel like so much of what I've said about this movie is different ways of me saying like I like this movie because it reminds me of the comic books that I like. You know, and not necessarily because as a movie, yeah, it's a real, if you sat down and watched it, you'd be like, this is a real lumpy piece of work. Like, there's all these scenes that don't really matter, and the movie reaches its high point of excitement and then has a lot of stuff it's got to deal with. And
and you're right. It is, I think I said in my review that this is a movie that's really not about anything except sort of crossing its own T's and dotting its own I's. But if you are this far into it, you know, you'll enjoy just that level of, like, you know, achievement unlocked, I guess, you know,
yeah,
of getting everybody onto the next place.
As a person who needs to consult my spouse between films to remind me why I'm going to see the next one. And now that I have seen all 22 of these films, like, this is not my world. He grew up with comic books. I did, but they were like Richie Rich, mm-hmm. you know, and Archie, and then it was over when I was, you know, 9. I have, and I've said this before on the show, I always enjoy myself when I'm watching these films, but when they're done, they're done. Like, I don't carry the information to the next one. I need to ask Alonzo, what happened in the last one? What's this one about? Who are these new characters? Like, I would never stay for the little bumps at the end because they didn't make any sense to me. And I would just say, I'm going to go. He'll tell me what it meant later. And I had such a wonderful time seeing everything tied up and having a really long movie to do it in.
Yeah.
And the stuff that officially, I guess, doesn't work, worked for me because it was downtime between information blasts.
Yeah.
So Ant-Man becoming a baby and an old man and stuff, I just thought, this is fine.
No, that's true.
This is fine. You know, any goofy thing that didn't matter, I just thought, I like that. I like it. I like the goofy parts that don't matter.
I mean, I like the goofy parts a lot, too.
Yeah.
It's just a lot.
And I just was very, very happy at the end of it. And honestly, also, again, moved at the end when Captain America is now 100 or whatever. And I mean, it doesn't make sense because you think, well, did you never exist as Captain
I was
going to
say, have
America?
You now changed fine. The entire 20th century?
No,
or...
that's not but how like... it works. He's just hanging out.
But the,
he did all that stuff, and then he lay low for a while.
He got to go be with her.
Yeah.
And then he hands the shield off to Anthony Mackie, and I thought, ooh, Anthony Mackie's going to be Captain America now. That's cool. Take that, terrible racist people.
that's something that... is so they managed to make a strength out of what everyone thought of as a weakness. I think
mm-hmm.
in the comics, like characters will hand over mantles sometimes, but it always goes back because they're not real, so you can just have them live forever.
Right.
But it was like, yeah, there's something so satisfying about like we've seen the story of Iron Man's life, we've seen the story of Captain America's life,
yeah.
and now those actors are off doing other things, and
right.
so it has to move on. And like it gives you there's a. I think it's Alan Moore said he had a pitch a long time ago for a series called Twilight of the Gods for DC, where he said the reason that superheroes can't be a myth is because myths lead to endings and superhero comics can never end. So this is my ending for the DC universe. And they never did it. And part of it is like everyone becomes a sex freak. And it's like, isn't that Alan Moore? Like, it's just way too dark. But here it was like, oh, okay. Like now these are stories. And now that means I can invest myself in them. And there's an end point. And to see, yeah, there was something very moving to see those characters, like, set down the burden that had been on them, or, like, to end that responsibility. And
In the other films, watching people die never affected me at all, because it's thought, well, you're just coming back for the next movie. I can see on IMDb that you're going to be in the next film. And so
this time around,
knowing that there's a finality to at least some of the characters and the actors who portray them, that made it feel more whole.
Yeah,
and endings are satisfying, and we never get them in comics. You don't get them in soap operas. Like, there's several genres that just have to sort of keep going, you know. And I think what's interesting about comics is when they started, they had no idea that this was going to be an issue. You know, when Siegel and Shuster created Superman in 1939 or whenever.
Yeah, something around that.
You know, they never thought, well, we have to build something into this character so that when they're still telling this story 80 years later, it makes sense.
They used to kill the villains at the end of every story. Like, the Joker shows up in a Batman comic the first time and then he dies. And they're like, I'll come up with somebody else later. You know, like, that's...
I got a million of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so you know, it's been interesting to watch part of following comics has been following, how do we keep this ball rolling? How, you know, it's like, okay, we'll do the Ultimates version so that Peter Parker can be a teenager again, or we'll reboot the entire universe. But, you know, I think Marvel has had the luxury of, since these characters all date back to the early 60s, except for Captain America, who they literally did put on ice, you know, the way that the movies have.
I was thinking about it the other day. Sorry, this is not a worthwhile trip.
Like, no, let me just finish.
Okay, then I'll say my worthwhile.
They have the luxury of not having to deal with, like, the whole crazy comics code period. The Batman in the rainbow outfit and the, you know, running around with Batwoman or whatever to make him look less gay.
And, like,
you know, they got all the good. They got nothing but good stuff. You know, it only got darker and weirder from where they started. Whereas, you know, Superman and Batman and the, you know, Wonder Woman was being the freaking secretary of the Justice League, you know, and cleaning up after everybody, you know. So it's just interesting to watch how they've had to deal with changing times and deal with these characters who can only be within this certain margin of age, you know, over and over and over again as decades roll by.
It means you don't have, it's like, for all the talk of, like, because it is, that superheroes are essentially an immature type of storytelling because it's power, fantasy and comfort goods, stuff like that. Like, it's a very mature thing to say, this is where this story ends. Mm. And now I've had as much of that story as I need. That story's, even if it's 22 movies seems like a ridiculous amount of story, but it's like, okay, and maybe we'll make other ones, but that'll be a new story.
Right.
But, like, the thing that, it's like the difference between, it's like the difference between a story and just an anecdote or whatever, is that it comes to an end, you close the book, and you put it on the shelf and you said, that was really good. Now it's going to sit with me for, I don't know how long, and I'll think about it, but there's no more to it. And and I was thinking about that. This is what I was going to say, but I'm going to try to make it relevant. that like, because you have these characters who age and don't want to do this forever, as much as Chris Evans, like, thinks of himself as Captain America now, like, I'm sure he does not want to be doing this job forever, that, like, you don't have the thing that the comics have to deal with, where Captain America was on ice originally for, like, 20 years, because it was from the 40s to the 60s.
Right.
And then as comics go on, everyone has to stay young. And so the gap between that time has gotten longer and longer. And that's
why, like, how the Simpsons have to keep rejiggering Homer and Marge's first date was.
Yeah, now they're younger than me, which I do not like at all. they're dating later than I met my wife, which is crazy. But it's like, in the old comics, it was like, oh, Captain America's running into all these guys he used to know in the service, but they're older now. And then, but nowadays, it's like, well, all those guys are dead. He just goes to cemeteries and there's a wider and wider gap. And if they keep publishing the comics, eventually it's going to get to the point where it's like, yeah, when I fought in World War II 100 years ago, but the movies have, because it's tied to a real person, it's like, when it says 5 years later at the very beginning, it's like, oh, these are real people who aged 5 years. And, like, when they go back to the years the movies came out, I guess, as, like, the years when the events happened, and it shows the year on screen. It feels like they're planting a flag in the ground, saying, like, this is when this movie is.
Right.
Like, this is not something that is so elastic.
We're not going to move it up later. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. This, and that means that it's a, Yeah, it's just kind of like a more mature story in a way. Keeping in mind, again, that it is a story about that involves a talking raccoon shooting a laser gun
with his talking tree friend.
Yeah. Very little Groot in the movie, which was like fine with me because a little Groot goes a long way.
Yes.
But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to. Yeah, we've been talking about it for a long time.
No, this is, you know.
I have a question.
Yes, please.
When does Linda Cardellini, the human, sleep? She is in every film. She's the Gene Hackman of right now.
She's like, our Michael Caine.
Remember that moment when Michael Caine and Gene Hackman were like in every movie?
Right.
That's Linda Cardellini now.
Yeah, there's that one year when Helen Hunt had to be in every single movie that's coming. I mean, that's one of the problems with the Marvel movies, one of the few problems, because they're otherwise perfect, is that a lot of really great actors and actresses get kind of like thrown away into what small parts that don't need them necessarily.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Robert Redford has two lines in this movie.
and Natalie Portman has no lines in the movie. Oh, she's just a face.
That's actually repurposed footage from
really?
Thor the Dark World.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then never mind.
I have not been that. Without Linda
but she
Cardellini
did loop a line, though.
Oh, okay.
Since A Simple Favor. Like,
oh, wow,
A
yeah.
Simple Favor ended, and then I saw Green Book, and then
Curse
Green
of
Book
La
ended, and then I saw Hunter Killer, and then I saw The Curse of La Llorona, and now I'm seeing her here, and
she's got a Netflix show.
She got a Netflix show, and I'm thinking, I'm concerned for you. Like, I'm glad you're working, I'm glad you're making money, but I need you to please take care of yourself. it's a lot of work that
I
you're
hope
doing.
You're getting some massages.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my Linda Cardellini concern question.
All for concern and help. You're like Linda, blink in the next movie if you need help. If someone is making you do these things.
Final thoughts
on this. I like how the subtle message of collective work is always here. Because communism is great. And I believe in, you know, the power of the group. And that's one of the things I've always loved about this stuff. I don't like one superhero who comes in and fixes everything. I like a bunch of people coming in and fixing things. Mm-hmm. So, and they stand in for all of humanity, of course, you know,
right.
Blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah. Elliot?
No, I agree. I think it's like there's a validity to the complaint that why do we all have to see these superhero movies and why there's so many of them and why do we have to, but like they're at such a high level of quality for like mainstream adventure action movies. Really the only real complaint that I have about this movie is that like I can't see it with my son until he's much older because it's too violent and they say bad words. They use the S word so much more than I would like them to in these movies.
Yes.
And that's my one complaint. But like,
also, it's 3 hours long.
And it's real. I mean, he'll sit through that. I mean, we'll watch it over like 10 days. But I'm not going to take him to the theater for it.
Oh.
But because, yeah, about an hour in, he'd be like, is it done yet? But there's, like, if they can, there's like some Marvel movies are better than others, and there's a couple I haven't gotten around to seeing yet. But I'm just astounded at the level of quality they've been able to keep relatively constant over it.
Yeah.
And there's another valid complaint to be made that like, or criticism to be made that like, they're all kind of the same. You know what you're getting when you go in, but like, that's also like not a bad thing.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think about the only comparable franchise to this is like the 007 movies.
Yeah.
But those don't have an arc. Like, they're all very discreet, and very occasionally they might refer to something that happened in a previous film.
Yeah.
Like, one of the exceptions is, I guess, Quantum of Solace is very much a follow-up to Casino Royale.
Well, the Daniel Craig movies follow pretty close.
Yeah.
But it's like, but even then you're like, oh, so is this a different James Bond than the other James Bonds? Where it's like a...
Like in Honor Majesty's Secret Service, they make it a point to like, he opens that drawer and, you know, there's the Goldfinger thing in there and there's a Thunderball that like trying to remind you that it's the same guy,
yeah.
You know. But generally speaking, those movies... It's not like, oh, remember that time I almost got married, or I got married to Diana Rigg and then they killed her. Like, that doesn't come up again.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But, and they, it's a, yeah, they like, the, and the Devil's Team movies, wild, they vary so wildly in quality.
Yeah.
Like, there's some that are wonderful and there's some where you're like, ugh, like, how did this escape?
Why are we here?
Yeah. And
it's
like an impressive feat. It's, I think this is saying, this is wildly overstating it, but not in terms of cultural impact or quality or anything, but there's something to compare it to, like the Ring cycle, where it's like this is a sustained epic myth over a very long period of time that brings together all these different creative disciplines in a lot of ways. Like, you look at, like, the design work in it, so much of it is amazing, you know, and that, like, to be able to sustain that. Maybe, you know, I was, all that stuff I was saying about Kevin Feige earlier, okay, he's a genius, but he's a genius who's who basically is standing, oh, and this is the other thing about these movies, is that they went from being the standard, yeah, a bunch of guys made these characters, but really, this is the movie, to the fact that they are so much more aware of thanking the creators of those characters and also and the people who worked on them, and that that has raised the profile of those creators in such a way. Like, that we live in a world where, like, when Steve Ditko dies, he has an obituary in the New York Times. When Stan Lee dies, like, it's a major story. When Gil Kane died years ago, like, it was in the newspaper, and I was amazed by that. Like, when Jim Starlin dies, you know, hopefully not for a long time, because I love it, so, but, like, it'll Thanos creator Jim Starlin will be in the newspaper. That it's like, and that the movie ends with, you know, based on works created by Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, which is also, like, you didn't create all those characters, but, like, most of them. But it's a, that it is, it's the rare thing where an enormous corporation has made a huge franchise of movies, and the movies hold together and are high quality, and they, at least at the very end, are not forgetting the people who created the original stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're financially screwing all of them over.
Oh, but, very much, you know. So. Well, I heard a story recently about Jim Starlin's settlement with Marvel after they used Thanos without his permission, and how he was pretty happy with the settlement. So, like, it's, oh, like, okay, so it's a slightly different world than that. But they're still not, yeah, it's not, they're not making $1 billion, you know. But it feels so different than, like, the new Disney version of Dumbo, where in the trailers it's like, from the imagination of Tim Burton, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's already a movie called Dumbo, and that was based on a book. So, like, that was, it feels like if this is the new template for big blockbuster entertainment, then that's a positive step. That's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that it's almost at a point where we're kind of taking these movies for granted because they're making it seem so easy or so intuitive, like, how to tell this story. But again, like, there, you know, look at all the movies that came out in the wake of Batman, you know, like The Phantom and The Shadow, and, you know, look at the movie they made of The Spirit. Like, it's very easy to go very wrong. That's with true. Things.
Or, just, or even now with, like, the Dark Universe movies, where it's like, it's easy to do it wrong. So then we'll always have this one version.
You know, and where it goes from here, who knows? But I mean, I think what I find kind of fascinating in all this, and part of this sort of ties into the idea of, like, why Steve Ditko gets a New York Times obit, is that what used to be considered this sort of fringy geek thing is now, like, the epicenter of the culture. Like, it is the popular, you know, it's the BMOC, you know, the comic books. And so I certainly never would have imagined in the days that, you know, I was, you know, subscribing to the Avengers in high school or whatever, that, like, the Avengers would be a thing that everyone was talking about.
I think I'll never ever feel the feeling I did. I'll never again feel a feeling when the first Avengers movie ended and Thanos showed up on screen for the first time. And I was like, I live in a universe where Thanos is in a movie. Like, it was the most exciting, just to be like, like, my mom is going to have to learn who Thanos is. Like, this is crazy. She still hasn't, but in theory,
well, she could.
She could, conceivably.
Okay, so we made an executive decision, and if you remember our Mamma Mia 2 episode last year,
and
who
can forget?
The same thing happened where we were going to do a whole lineup of films, and then we wound up talking for a really long time about one movie, and I was like, well, that's just going to be the movie we do this episode. So we will circle back to Burial of Kojo and Under the Silver Lake this weekend when we talk about other stuff. But
before the next episode with another special guest.
Ooh, yes. Are we announcing that? Or?
Oh, I think we already said it, didn't we?
I don't know that we did.
Manola's coming back to talk about all the recently deceased filmmakers who she wonderfully refers to as off Hollywood.
Yes. So Manola
Darius. Anya Sparta, Jonas Mekas, Barbara Hammer, Larry Cohen.
Yeah. Manola Dargis of the New York Times will be joining us. We're very excited.
We're going to talk about dead people.
Yes. and you know, if you, this is your first time listening, if you are,
if
you're,
you like
if, you're an, if you're an L head and that brought you this way, maybe you'd like to know about our Patreon page.
Maybe you would like to know about it. We do other shows. We do LKTV, which is about television. We do Linoleum Knife and Fork, which is a food podcast hosted by two film critics. We do Linoleum Nights, where we talk about taboo topics. And, you know, there's like the mugs and the t-shirts and the bags and the pins and the magnets and all that stuff too.
Private Knife.
The thing called Private Knife, where you tell us your topic. We do a private podcast for you and only you.
Google Hangouts every month, where we watch movies on Netflix.
And we all sit around and talk about it. If you join at the tiniest level of all, you still get a thing called LKRX, where we recommend something in the culture to you each and every day.
Yes,
on Patreon. So, you know, join us. And if you're already a Patreon person,
thank you.
And you want things, a private knife, you want your shirt, your mug, whatever, and you haven't communicated with me about these things that you need, please do, because I am not a superhero, and I screw things up quite often, and sometimes don't get to people. So come to me. Talk to me. D. Leland White, 1964. At Gmail, and that's how you find me to say, hey, I want my t-shirt.
Give me those Infinity Stones.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Correct.
Ellie Kalin, you are a national treasure, and we thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks. Yes.
Where can people...
They usually only tell old people that.
Here's your lifetime achievement award.
They have those things in Japan, and they have, like, you're called, like, a living treasure of the nation or something like that. And they come out to you that you're, like, you've been serving sushi for 85 years. You're 100 years old now. Like, here you go. I guess they have a lot more 100-year-olds.
Where can people find you online?
I'm on Twitter,
yep.
At Elliot Kalin. That's two L's, two T's, and Elliot, just one L in Kalin. But the Flophouse podcast on Maximum Fun is my main other thing, and I guess that's where you can find me. If you own or know of a child or feel like one, I came out with a kid's picture book last year called Horse Meets Dog that I would highly recommend. I think it's great. And,
it's charming.
Oh, thank you. It's about a horse that meets a dog. And the title tells the tale.
Do they become friends?
They do not. It's open-ended. It's a spoiler alert. It's open-ended.
Can we not spoil the book?
Yeah, sorry.
Just because it's called Horse Meets Dog doesn't mean it tells you everything.
I'm just asking
questions.
That's just
act one.
That's just, well, yeah. Well, this,
I'm being a journalist right now.
this is the first part of the Horse Meets Dog-averse. And so we're just setting up the characters.
22 books then, later, it's really going to really
come together. People are going to be crying. It's going to be, that will be a 500-page picture book. It's going to be so many things we have to pay off. I wish I had other things to point to at the moment. Mystery Science Theater 3000: The Return is on Netflix.
If you didn't watch The Gauntlet, go do that.
Oh yeah, you got to watch them all the episodes in a row. We binge made it, so you have to binge watch it. And there's I'll throw this in too. Why not? There's a show that's on a couple other shows on Netflix that are kid shows, but anyone can watch them, I guess. There's a cartoon called Harvey Girls Forever, which is the second season of a show called Harvey Street Kids, and I wrote two episodes of that. Oh. And there's a show called The Who Was Show, which is a kid's show about history. And on Friday, I will be attending the Daytime Creative Arts Emmys in Pasadena to see if I win for that. So, yeah, I don't know. Go on my IMDb page. You can go buy the trade paperback of Spider-Man and the X-Men, the 6-issue series I did for Marvel.
You totally should.
No, like, there's all sorts of... I mean, there's lots of stuff I can mention, but none of it is relevant or timely. So
is Real News with Ted Nelm still on the Comedy Central app?
Fake News with Ted?
Fake News, sorry, yes.
It's on the Comedy Central website, I know. I don't remember if it's on the app, but it's – if you have – but yeah, there's a special I was the head writer and co-EP on the year before last called The Fake News with Ted Nelm, which is it's like the airplane version of a – cable news show. I mean, Airplane the movie, not like you would watch on Airplane. But it's just like you're watching an insane fake newscast for 50 minutes.
There's a bumper stinger joke that made me cry laughing.
Oh, which one is it? I gotta know.
It's just where it's like, duh.
Oh, yeah.
Like it keeps going.
The opening just kind of like doesn't quite stop. Yeah. And the title keeps kind of like boom, bumping. Oh, that was so, it was, that show was one of the most fun things that I've ever worked on. And it was like, and it was just a great, you know, Ed Helms is the host of it, and mm. he was great as always to work with, and it was just like, that's if you want to see like the most puristly like silly thing that I've been involved with, then that's it. There's a sequence in that where Ed Helms as Ted Nelms, the anchor of TFN, the fake news, he is covering, it's supposed to be the birth of there's a celebrity giraffe that has, everyone's been following its pregnancy, and now it's finally giving birth, and he can't wait for this beautiful moment, and he's so grossed out by it that he's just like dry heaving, trying to be like do an upbeat kind of like lighter side of the news play-by-play of this giraffe birth, and it was so much fun trying to figure out which moments from the real video of the birth of a giraffe that we were going to use. I was able to write a whole sequence about, now I'm talking to
someone's trapped in a well, right?
So President Trump is trapped in a well. Yeah. We don't really want to deal with him. So he's trapped in a well, and there's a whole segment about, where the point of it was kind of like how the news will baselessly speculate about anything, where a character, they're talking about internet trolls, and one of the people on the panel thinks they're talking about real trolls, and Ted Nelms is like, well, that brings up a good issue. If they were real, would we be ready for trolls? And that spins off into eventually, has the president met any trolls while he's under the well? And maybe he's running for president of the trolls. Does he have a chance? Let's look at the board. Let's look at the map. And there, the matchup between him and Tharg, the current king of the trolls. And whether and that was one of those things where it was just like, I'm just going to start writing, and I'll keep writing until the segment is done. And there's a big bit about like Tharg's, you know, does he have a road to the Granite Crown? He does, and that's road's name is Tharg. Tharg's got a lot of baggage. He's been around a long time, and a lot of it, for all those who are saying that it's Tharg's time, there are others saying that Tharg supporters need to be thrown into the pit of the blind serpent. So we don't like there was a all this stuff about like you know having come from the above lands, people will assume that President Trump is of course a god, and that'll help him out. Well, it won't play in the troll cities, you know, like, but here in the hinterlands where the fungus farmers live, like it's just like that's the kind of stuff in it. Like it's just goofy. So and much like Avengers Endgame, it all comes up together. You know, in the end, it culminates in a thing where all the ends get tied together. So.
You cry.
Yeah, and you cry. I mean, there's a kind of touching moment. There's this young reporter who's supposed to report on a murder trial, and he never has any scoops, but he keeps calling in anyway because he wants attention.
Oh, yes.
And it becomes clear that Ted is dating his mom, and he's like, "Look, just because I'm dating your mom doesn't mean you have to think of me like your dad." Like this, you know. And they have a moment of connection. But, it's definitely on the Comedy Central website. So excellent. If you go and look for the fake news.
Even though Elliot has ruined all the best jokes.
Yeah, no, there's so many. There was my mom watched that show. We tried to pack as many jokes as we could. My mom watched it, and she called me afterwards. She was like, "I'm exhausted from watching that show." Good. That's what I wanted. I wanted to wear the audience out.
Well, it has been a pleasure to have you. Thank you for being here. The door is always open. Thank you all for listening. Check out all of our friends on the internet. Go to ChrisTheLemire.com. Listen to Bibbs and Whitney with their shows, Critically Acclaimed and Canceled Too Soon, The Schmoes Know, The Comics Canon, Secretly Timid, All Things Cozy, Sewers of Paris, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. He's at Bluetopia.com, BLEUTOPIA. You can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review. It'll make you feel better.
Has anyone done that yet?
I think we have. I think we have a recent one. I will have it for next time.
For a while, it was pretty regular.
It was a little touch and go.
And then and then for the past 3 weeks, nothing.
Leave us positive feedback.
What's going on?
In all of our streaming places like Spotify and Stitcher Radio and Google Play. And drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
I miss those 5-star reviews. I like the deserts miss the rain.
The remix.
Yeah.
All right. Until next time.
Goodbye.